This is number 0061, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is once again another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0061. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Ambassador Andrew Young, who is the co-author of a book called Walk in My Shoes. He seems to have a cool, even temperament like Barack Obama. In a different time and place, could he have been the first black president of the United States?
Well, if I had come from New York or Chicago, but I'm from New Orleans and Georgia. And the difference is that the scars that I have coming up, I couldn't be quite, I was as cool as Barack Obama at points in my life in crises. But to be consistently as cool and stable and rational as he has been would have been very difficult for me. There were times that it was necessary for me to just bubble over. Because of my preacher background, I thought I was being prophetic, and maybe I was, but I was also speaking the truth in a way that it made a lot of people mad.
Actress Lisa Blunt, who is one of the stars of a new FX series entitled Outlaw Country. She always seems to play roles where the character's a little trashy. Is there a little bit of the trashy girl in Lisa Blunt?
That's a very, very good question. And no, to be honest with you, I'm a very straightforward person. I just can't believe the crazy outfits that they put me in, because I would never, ever know to think of those kinds of costumes, much less, you know, choose to wear them.
Stuart Nallman is back with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nallman. On this edition of Book Banter, that wild and crazy guy, Steve Martin, once again delves into the world of kids' books with Late for School, as well as other examples of comics who took up the pen with the mic. All this coming up next on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff. And, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0061, is Detlev Schmalhaus, a close personal friend of mine. We've been close pals, actually, all the way back to our college days. He's a technical rep for a company called ProDen Enterprises, and I thank you very much, Daddy, for being the guest Slater on this edition of the Stuff File program. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, we often talk on the show about people who wander into other people's houses thinking they're at home because, well, usually they're drunk. Here's another case of that in Sydney, Australia. An Australian woman woke up terrified after a drunken neighbor walked into her house and took a shower, mistakenly thinking he was at home. Police said the man blundered into the wrong house in Australia's far north in a town called Catherine and jumped into the shower to sober up before he realized his error. He was very apologetic, Superintendent Daniel Sheen said. The woman was just happy for us to take him away. She thought he was a burglar. The 42-year-old man was dressed and sitting on the woman's veranda when police arrived. The report said a couple in the outback region once caught a man cooking breakfast in their kitchen in the wee hours of the morning, and that a Darwin woman was watching TV when a drunk strolled into her house thinking he was at home. It's not nice when you find an intruder in your house. And here's another story of yet another intruder. In Portland, Oregon, 24-year-old Dustin Hawes was playing video games in his living room when one of his pit bulls started growling. He found the dog outside the bathroom and said, "The way he was barking rapidly, I could tell he was really scared." Wow, a scared pit bull? Anyway, Dustin grabbed a baseball bat and stepped into the bathroom. He slowly pulled the shower curtain open and found a strange man lying in the tub covered in mud, sweating profusely, and wearing Dustin's University of Oregon Ducks football jersey. Dustin, whose two young daughters, ages 3 and 5, were asleep on the couch, said, "It scared the crap out of me." The muddy man then reached in for his wallet, pulled out a $100 bill, and offered it to Dustin to keep him from calling police. Apparently, he should have offered more because Dustin quickly called police and found they were already in the neighborhood using a dog to track a suspect who was accused of breaking into another neighborhood home. Turns out, it was the same guy. 27-year-old Radai Ortega Vasquez, who pleaded not guilty to first-degree burglary, second-degree criminal trespass, and failure to appear on a Beaverton traffic warrant. He also faces an immigration hold and is looking at some serious jail time. In the end, Justin is most bummed out about losing his Oregon Ducks jersey, which he never got back. Yeah. Anyway, looking for that exotic wedding package? You can get them at destination resorts all over the world, like Disney World in Vegas. And oh yeah, and now you can also get one at McDonald's in China. Hong Kong will be the first city in the world to roll out McDonald's nuptials package starting January 1st of next year. This amazing package includes a baked apple pie wedding cake, a dress made out of party balloons, kiddie party favors for guests, and of course, full catering by McDonald's. Alcohol is banned to make sure there won't be a drunk party guests acting inappropriately, so newlyweds will have to toast their union with soft drinks instead. The cost will run about $360 US, and it's unlikely that a couple will be able to book the entire restaurant for their wedding. But at that price, who cares if babies are screaming in the next booth? The idea came about when one couple who met and dated at McDonald's held their wedding party at the restaurant. McDonald's Hong Kong will also be accepting bookings for engagement parties and wedding anniversary parties. Isn't that romantic? Anyway, on to Georgia. Authorities in Athens, Georgia have arrested the toilet lid killer. Really? Investigators say 40-year-old William Thomas Valentine Jr. used a toilet seat lid to bludgeon an Athens man to death early Sunday. He is accused of killing Alfred Lorenzo Harris, age 51, in the victim's home, police said. After the woman who lives with Harris witnessed the attack, Valentine took her to Madison County and sexually assaulted her. Nice guy, huh? Beaten to death by a toilet seat? Wow. Is there no shame? Okay, and finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first very special guest on the program. You know, for most of us, striking two cars on an interstate while so drunk that police officers think you're speaking a foreign language would mean some serious jail time. But if you're the mayor of Mankato, Michigan, it's only 3 days of community service. No kidding. That's all Mayor John Brady got after pleading guilty to drunken driving related to an August incident. Mayor Brady, the consummate spin doctor, said, "I look at this as an opportunity, in many ways, a gift, to get my addiction under control." So the 61-year-old mayor will perform 3 days of community service in the city where he's served as mayor for the past 4 years. Mayor Brady also admitted to driving with an open bottle of vodka, for which he was fined a whopping $100. It's good to be the mayor, isn't it? Yeah. Well, speaking of mayors, let's get to a much better person to have served as mayor and our first guest on the Stuff File program. Andrew Young was a top aide to Martin Luther King Jr. and one of history's most important civil rights leaders. He's been a witness to history and made history of his own. He's been the mayor of Atlanta, a congressman, and U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Ambassador Young, along with his godson, has written a book based on his mentoring of his godson, Kabir Segal. The book is called Walk in My Shoes. Ambassador Young joins us on the line right now. Hello, sir. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm fine. It's a pleasure and honor to have a chance to talk to you. In writing this book, and you've written many, and you've written this with your godson, you are mentoring him, so it gives you another chance to reflect on some of the things that you have done and you have witnessed in your lifetime. Is it sometimes hard to believe the journey your life has taken?
Well, you know, it isn't hard for me to believe it because I've enjoyed every minute of it. And I still look back on it with very, very fond memories. And actually, I delight in telling those stories over and over again. But he started, Kabir came to interview me when he was in second grade for his second grade newspaper, and that impressed me. And we stayed in touch I later worked with his father after I left City Hall. We were fairly close. We went to Africa together when he was in high school with my family and his family. And then he went to Dartmouth and London School of Economics. But he always called me up to ask my advice on stuff. Well, one of the history professors, Doug Brinkley, he mentioned this to Doug Brinkley, something I said. And Doug Brinkley's from New Orleans. Well, he was in New Orleans then, and I'm from New Orleans. So Doug Brinkley suggested that we tape these conversations if I didn't object. So he started taping our conversations, and that's where the book came from. But I was, I think by that time I was 76 and he was 26 when we started taping. And I said, look, I'm not running for anything anymore. I really don't care what anybody thinks about what I think. I'm going to shoot it to you straight. It won't be politically correct, but the important thing is for you to develop your own view of the world and, you know, not walk in my shoes or try. In fact, he was talking to me about going into politics, but he had a job at J.P. Morgan. And I said, no, God has put you in banking, and we need good people with good ideas and clear conscience, because ultimately most of the problems we're going to face in the 21st century are economic problems. So we have to have people of conscience and people of goodwill in the financial sector, as well as in politics. But you're in the financial sector. Stay there as long as you can.
The struggles that you've witnessed through the course of time, you look back at it now, here we are in 2010. We've come a long way. As far as you'd like to see us go, or is there still a great distance?
No, actually, we have come a long way socially and politically, but we're actually slipping back economically. I read another book, Arianna Huffington's Third World America, and a simple fact just shook me up, that the trains, you know, between New York and between Chicago and Minneapolis don't go as fast now as they did in the 1950s. And that we are in an infrastructure crisis, an environmental crisis. And the things that require government action are being neglected, because everybody wants to be through with government and wants to put all their hope in the private sector. And I believe in the private sector too, but the private sector is not going to put sewers in your cities. It's going to take a lot of government incentive. In fact, we forget that the progress we've made has not, well, the private sector feeds off of government research, off of the experience that of government investment. Then it takes it and capitalizes on it. But for the most part, the hard issues of our time are not easily profitable. So the long-term risks and the long-term vision, I think, at least in infrastructure development, probably must come from the government still.
I look back at your career through the work you did in civil rights, all the way up to when you became ambassador to the United Nations. I look at how far the United States has come with the election of someone like Barack Obama. I see similarities in your career and your temperament to his. Do you think in a different time and space you could have run for president of the United States?
Well, if I had come from New York or Chicago, but I'm from New Orleans and Georgia. And the difference is that the scars that I have coming up I couldn't be quite. I was as cool as Barack Obama at points in my life in crises, but to be consistently as cool and stable and rational as he has been would have been very difficult for me. There were times that it was necessary for me to just bubble over. Because of my preacher background, I thought I was being prophetic, and maybe I was, but I was also speaking the truth in a way that it made a lot of people mad. Nothing I've done has been popular when I started doing it. And I think that he's able to come in now, in part because we broke down a lot of barriers. And we made a lot of people mad. And we threatened the ideas of the majority group, but we threatened them in such a way that we helped them to grow and we made them better. But it still doesn't mean that they appreciated us. In fact, Dr. King used to say, it's a 10-day nation. He said, the first 10 days, no matter what you're doing, everybody's going to say, you're wrong. These are communist ideas, or you're trying to upset our great society. The second 10 days, they'd say, well, maybe you got a point, but we would have done it if you had not been so rambunctious, see? And then the third 10 days, they take it over and they forgot you had anything to do with it. And it was their idea all along. We saw that happen with Lyndon Johnson. We saw him, heard him tell us in 1964, there was no way he could pass a civil rights bill, a voting rights act. He had just passed the 64 Civil Rights Act, and we said, but we still don't have the right to vote. We got the right to vote as a result of Selma and his efforts in Congress. But when he had a conference at the White House in September of 65 or early 66, he didn't mention Martin Luther King's name. It was as though all of this was the work of the Johnson administration. And we were not offended by that. We just understood that was, we had done what we had to do, and he couldn't have done what he did if we had not done what we did.
With all you've done, what do you think is the most important aspect or part of your legacy?
Well, I think the what I like most is Atlanta. Because I think that I was assisting Martin Luther King, and it was his movement, and I was assisting Jimmy Carter at the UN, and those were his policies. When I was thrust into the leadership of Atlanta, we were in pretty bad shape, economically and, polarized racially, and I was able to pull that city together. When I started talking about making Atlanta an international city, they actually made cartoons about it, and they ridiculed it. One of the columnists wrote about how ridiculous it was that I wanted Atlanta to be an international city, and he used as a symbol of what I meant. He thinks people want to fly to Lagos, Nigeria. Well, the truth of it is right now, the flight between Atlanta and Lagos is the most profitable flight in the entire Delta system of almost 1,000 flights a day. The one to Lagos makes the most money. Atlanta, Johannesburg is second. And we have 11 flights a day to Africa. We fly to some 36 countries every day. We are an international city. We also, during the 8 years I was mayor, attracted $70 billion of foreign investment from around the world. 1,100 new companies moved into Atlanta, and we created 1 million new jobs. When I started, we were just a little over, just almost 2 million people. Now we're almost 6 million people. And we brought the Olympics in, you know, the next decade. And it was what I call public purpose capitalism. What we did in Atlanta, we designed and we defined the public purpose in our airport, for instance. We wanted a big international airport, but we didn't have the taxpayer money to do it. So we defined it. We put it out to bid. We sold tax-exempt municipal bonds. And we raised the money privately. The airport was constructed privately. And it's the busiest airport in the world now. And we're doing an additional $6 billion expansion now. In addition to, I mean, we were already the busiest in the world 5 years ago. Now we're adding $6 billion international terminal to it. And I just feel very proud of the city. We're still a slight majority black city, but no contract on that airport was done, and no contract was let on the Olympics that didn't have minority and female participation of at least 25%. And in the Olympics, it was 40%. And so we have had economic growth that has crossed racial and gender lines. And that's what makes the, well, that's something I'm most proud of.
Well, there's a lot for you to be proud of, and it's a pretty impressive track record, to say the least. The book is called Walk in My Shoes, which you've written along with your godson, Kabir Sehgal. And I thank you very, very much, sir, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Ambassador Andrew Young, the co-author of Walk in My Shoes. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0061, and you'll find links to Ambassador Young's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Actors, authors, quirky guests, and the common folk. It all comes to you here on The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to actress Lisa Blunt from the television series Outlaw Country. And we'll have another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. But right now, more stuff right here. Oh yes, of course, don't forget we have an Idiot of the Day coming up as well. Stick around for that. Okay, back to the stuff. In Longview, Washington, 26-year-old Eric Mitchell Lair managed to do what you'd think would be the impossible. He escaped from the locked backseat of a Department of Corrections car while handcuffed. So the police aren't just looking for him. They also want to charge him with stealing the handcuffs. Lair was arrested on a felony warrant. He was handcuffed behind his back, but still managed to open the door of the car that was taking him to Cowlitz County Jail and run off. A search of the area turned up nothing. The stolen handcuffs are valued at $29, thus stealing them constitutes a third-degree theft. Meanwhile, over in Great Britain, Tanya Doherty believed in 2008 she was finally rid of crazy ex-boyfriend Kawa Ali Azad. Azad had stalked and assaulted her, including once beating her unconscious after she ended their affair back in 2006. Azad was arrested and ordered deported to his native Iraq, but then Iraq refused to take him back, so he applied to stay in Britain and, pending an immigration decision, was released by a judge sensitive to the human rights of someone seeking international asylum. So guess what? Azad immediately resumed harassing Miss Doherty. But hey, at least his human rights weren't violated. You know, that judge came this close to being this week's Idiot of the Day, but he's not. That's coming later. On to Baltimore. A Baltimore man has been sentenced to a year and a half in jail for faking seizures to get out of paying restaurant bills. City prosecutors say 43-year-old Andrew Palmer pleaded guilty to one count of theft scheme, and a judge agreed to impose an 18-month sentence. That's the maximum Palmer could have received. Prosecutors said Palmer ate and drank at several restaurants between April and July, and when he couldn't pay, he would feign a seizure that required medical personnel to respond. The maximum penalty for each individual offense was 90 days in jail because of the value of each meal, which was less than $100. Court records show Palmer has a long criminal record that includes 40 convictions for theft and dozens more arrests. Well, you know, he's getting 18 months in jail, so for 18 months, he'll get to eat for free. There you go. It all works out in the end, doesn't it? Okay, Florida police said they used a stun gun to stop an 18-year-old nude jogger who repeatedly refused to halt. West Melbourne police said an officer responded to a report of a man running nude at about 7 a.m. and spotted Zach Anthony King of Palm Bay, Florida, running along the street wearing nothing but swimming goggles. Not even running shoes? That's... ugh. Anyway, the officer pulled up alongside King and repeatedly told him to stop, but King did not comply. The arrest report said the officer told King he would use his stun gun if he did not stop running, and King was quoted as saying, "Why would you tase me?" However, King did not stop, and the officer did use the stun gun to stun King, who fell to the sidewalk. King received treatment for minor injuries at a hospital and was given a notice to appear in court on charges of resisting arrest without violence and, oh yeah, indecent exposure. And finally, in this section of the Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, we go to Calumet County, Wisconsin. That's where you'll find District Attorney Ken Kratz, age 50. He admitted sending 30 text messages to the victim in a case he was prosecuting, apparently trying to get her to have an affair with him. Here's what he wrote. "Are you the kind of girl that likes secret contact with an older married elected DA? The riskier, the better." He referred to the 25-year-old victim as a young hot nymph and wondered if her lack of response was due to your low self-esteem and you fear that you can't successfully play in my big sandbox. Ugh. I want to take a bath just reading this. He suggested the woman will be either excited or grossed out about the opportunity you have. The exasperated woman, who was worried the prosecution of the violent crime against her would be dropped if she didn't cooperate with Kratz, went to police. When the message came to light, several other women said they got similar messages from Kratz. The state's Justice Department said no crime had been committed and referred the matter to the Office of Lawyer Regulation, which cleared Kratz of misconduct. Yes, let me repeat that. Cleared him of misconduct. Kratz, who was the chair of the state's Crime Victims Rights Board, refused to resign. So the governor himself stepped in to start termination proceedings, and only then did the prosecutor quit. What was it that he said? He suggested that the woman will be either excited or grossed out by the opportunity? I'm guessing she chose grossed out. Well, what did Shakespeare say about the lawyers? Yes. Anyway, let's get to our next guest on the Stuff File program, shall we? On the line with us right now is Oscar winner and Golden Globe nominee Lisa Blunt. She is currently working as an actress on the new television show for FX called Outlaw Country. We find her at her home in the state of Arkansas. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
I'm good, Peter. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being on the show. Now, I understand you are working on what is a very hush-hush series, a new show called Outlaw Country. Even though it is hush-hush, is there anything you can tell us about it?
Heck, I'll tell you everything I know. But, you know, I just know that when I read this pilot, I decided that I wanted to go back to work again. And for a number of reasons, I really feel that this has potential to shine a light on a part of elements of this country, these people, these places that maybe nobody's seen before in television.
What is Outlaw Country about?
Well, the title essentially reflects the at least from my character's point of view, we have a family of they're called the Larkins, and they are outlaws. They have always operated outside the law and always will. So this story takes place in a fictitious backwoods town in the state of Tennessee, where the Larkins do their business. The head of the family, played by John Hawkes, he's a wonderful and amazing actor, truly, truly wonderful. And then the other side is another family with Mary Steenburgen playing the lead in that family. She's from this small town, but got away and did well, and now she's come home. Now we have our Romeo and Juliet story, where the young man playing my son meets up with the young lady playing her daughter, and though they've been warned that these people don't mix, they fall in love immediately, of course, as young people tend to do. So that's essentially, I think, what this show is about. What I love about the show is that it's such an ensemble piece. There really are an awful lot of characters and storylines being developed, and whether or not the show gets picked up, of course, they have to be prepared, and I very much enjoyed the fact that not one person has to carry the show. It really is an ensemble effort.
Now, FX is known for producing some very gritty television shows with, in some cases, less than savory characters as the heroes. What drew you to this particular script? What made you say, I have to do this?
Well, one of the things that actually is a response to that comment is you're absolutely right. I have always found FX to be, in my own terms, I call it muscular, meaning that regardless of the gender of the actors playing the roles, this is very, generally speaking, a very plot-driven, very physical, very masculine, if you will. You know, this is where you could find shows that could be described that way. This show, though it also has elements of that, it's also very, not feminine, but there is a very strong female presence. And these women are they're very resourceful. My character, Donna, is a very resourceful woman. She certainly never had the opportunity to go to college, have any higher education, or to get out of this lifestyle. Whether she ever tried to or not, we don't know. But the elements, there are strong female characters in this, just side by side with the strong men. No differentiation, and I really appreciated that.
Now, you mentioned on the onset that you decided to go back to work. So had you stopped working for a while?
Well, yes and no. The last time I worked for someone other than myself was in 2003. So for me, this really was a big back-to-work sort of thing. My husband and myself and another FX actor, our partner Walton Goggins, began making our own projects, starting with The Accountant in 2000, and then we made some feature films. So that's where I put my energies and my efforts, and then working with my husband on several writing projects. There just wasn't anything that I was aware of that interested me I was much more interested in moving back to Arkansas and getting reacquainted with my family, you know, in a way other than just flying into town a few times a year. So that to find something that was Southern-centric, possibly to be shot near, you know, my home, all of that was very, very appealing. And also, I love playing these kinds of characters. Donna is yet another sort of trashy gal, but there's always a way to find the other side of the woman, you know, some sort of why is she this way, to humanize her, to shine a light maybe on the heart of a person like this, who on a superficial level just looks like a bad woman. And you know, there certainly are women out there like that, but most all of them, at least in their own minds, have justifications for their bad behavior. And Donna definitely has that.
Well, you say you like to play these types of characters, so I've got to ask, and please don't hurt me, is there a little bit of the trashy gal in Lisa Blunt?
That's a very, very good question. And no, to be honest with you, I'm a very straightforward person. I am always, I just can't believe the crazy outfit they put me in because I would never ever know to think of those kinds of costumes, much less, you know, choose to wear them. I'd let my hair color come back in many years ago to its natural brown, and when we when I hit the show up there in Tennessee with my hair color, the first thing was, we've got to lighten your hair back up, girl. So my 6-year-old niece says, wow, it's orange, it's perfect for Halloween. That gives you an idea of where that stands. But apparently some people think that these trashy women need to have bleach in their hair, so that's fine with me, no problem.
You mentioned your husband, and we've had your husband on our program before, Ray McKinnon, who a lot of people will remember was the coach in the excellent movie The Blind Side, which came out last year. And also you mentioned your short film, The Accountant, which you won an Academy Award for Best Live Action, so congratulations on that. You and your husband have both amazing careers, and you have, as you said, taken yourself out of the Hollywood situation you live in Arkansas. Was that a conscious effort to move away from the mainstream and go back home, as it were? And did you ever concern yourself with the idea that it might hurt your careers? Obviously, it has not.
Well, it is a really great luxury to be able to live where you choose to live, regardless of what your business is. In this case, when our business is, of course, centered in this country, in Los Angeles, and to another degree in New York, to be able to live in a, you know, in the place of your choosing is such a, it's just something we've both worked very hard to be able to do. Also, when Ray began to write more, it just seemed to both of us, not that the well had run dry, that would never be the case with Ray, but that on an experiential basis, his day in and day out life was in L.A., and you know, what would it be like to live sort of in the new South in a new time for us? And as it has turned out, it's absolutely enhanced his writing. He's not unlike most good writers. He definitely takes from his own experiences or those of others around him, and I see an awful lot of our world reflected in his current writing.
Hmm. Well, congratulations to both of you for the works you have put together so far and the works you'll do in the future. The new series, and I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it'll make it and people will be able to see it on FX. It's called Outlaw Country. And I thank you very, very much, Lisa, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Well, thank you very much, Peter.
Actress Lisa Blunt. Look for her in the new FX series called Outlaw Country. We mentioned her husband, actor and writer Ray McKinnon, a few times. If you want to hear the interview we did with him, you can find that in the archives on my website at thestufffile.com. He was on show number 0019. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones. Even if you never set foot in a courtroom, judges will have an enormous influence on your life. In fact, judges who serve on the state Supreme Courts and other appeals courts may create as much public policy in a given year as the lawmakers in your state capital. Because of that, judges in many states have been made accountable to the people, the voters, every bit as much as lawmakers, governors, and presidents are. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the First Amendment allows judicial candidates to answer your questions just like any other candidate can. So this election, get to know your judicial candidates and ask them to share their views. Let's be fair, judicial elections are a mystery to many of us. That's probably why polls show that most of us are more likely to know the names of the characters on our favorite television show than the names of the judges who decide how much freedom we have at work, at home, and in our communities. This election, let's change that. However you choose to vote, make it a point to learn about the men and women who are running on the judicial portion of your ballot. Find out more. Go to my website at bobdorigojones.com.
What are they saying about if the rains don't cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nullman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And once again, we do indeed have Stuart Nullman with another edition of Book Banter here on The Stuff File. Hi, Stu.
Hey, Peter. I'm very excited, actually.
Why is that?
Well, when I was in Las Vegas, thanks to the good people at Baum & Rare Books, I managed to purchase a book that is rare. It was published about 35 years ago. It's one of the last books that Groucho Marx published in his lifetime, called The Secret Word is Groucho, about his memoir of when he was hosting You Bet Your Life during the 50s.
And I know how big of a Groucho Marx fan you are.
Oh, yes.
The biggest.
Yes. And you know what the bonus was?
The book
was signed by Groucho himself.
Ah, very nice.
Oh, yes. And it's on its way to my house very soon. So I'm really looking forward to this. Oh, yes. It's got a special place in the bookshelf now.
Interesting book by a very funny man.
Oh, yes. And speaking of books of funny people, this is the bridge part of the segment.
The segue, yes.
On this edition of Book Banter, we have a book by a comedian, Steve Martin. Yeah. Well, you know what? Steve Martin could really be called a Renaissance comedian. I mean, everyone knows from the beginning he made a name for himself back in the 70s in the world of stand-up comedy with his white suit-wearing, arrow-through-the-head, wild and crazy guy persona. He recorded 4 comedy albums and a bluegrass music album, actually, in which 3 of them won Grammy Awards. And, of course, there is memorable performances in such movies as The Jerk, Parenthood of my personal favorite, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Also, he's completed his Renaissance career in comedy as a writer. He wrote a critically acclaimed play, Picasso de Lapin and Gilles, and his collection of offbeat bizarre short stories, Cruel Shoes, was the number one bestseller back in 1979, and subsequent books that he wrote, Pure Drivel, Shop Girl, and his excellent memoir, Born Standing Up, has also reached the heights of bestsellerdom. Now, Steve Martin has made a second foray into the world of children's books. It's called Late for School, and it's not just timely, it's also something that us school kids, past and present, can relate to and empathize with. The book focuses on a young boy who always oversleeps and ends up being late for school. And he worries that if he's late again, as the book says, he'll end up in what Martin calls the English grammar slammer and end up with a C grade. So the boy goes through an impossible way out obstacle course like journey in order to get to school on time. Now, what kind of obstacles, you may ask? Well, he accidentally pushes his grandmother's face into a piece of pie, leaps across three lawn flamingos, log rolled over a swimming pool kiddie float, and literally flew a kite to get to school on time. But will this be enough of an effort to avoid the English grammar slammer? Now, the theme of this book, it has a timeless quality to it. I mean, after all, haven't we all been late for school once in a while?
No.
Or more often.
No.
I was on a perfect attendance record when I was in grade 9. And Martin uses vivid imagination and sense of humor to give the story, which is told in rhyme, the right kind of twists and turns that will have readers of all ages laughing. And as an added bonus to the book, it contains a CD with Martin performing a musical version of the book's narrative, all accompanied to a bluegrass banjo tune. This is an instrument that Steve Martin has been an accomplished player of for many, many years, if you've seen his comedy act, you know, on stage or on Saturday Night Live. But Late for School will certainly ring a lot of bells of acclaim to how diversely talented Steve Martin is with his pen. And you know what? It's not bad for a wild and crazy guy like him. So the book is called Late for School by Steve Martin. It's published by Grand Central Publishing, and it's $21.99.
I didn't have a delinquent educational pass like you did, Stuart.
Oh, really? All right, I'll be honest. I got a late pass on the last day of school. Last full day of school, okay? It wasn't that perfect. 99.9% okay. Perfect, okay?
Any other books of this ilk that you'd like to recommend?
Well, books by comedians have always been around for a long time. Groucho is quite a scribe, wrote 7 books, so anything that you can get your hands on by Groucho is good. George Carlin, in the last decade of his life, wrote a trio of bestsellers of his comical musings, like When Will Jesus Bring the Pork Chops, Brain Droppings, and Napalm and Silly Putty. Also, the whole glut of comedian books started in 1993 with Seinfeld's Sign Language, but the one I really recommend was a great surprise was Artie Lang, who's a comedian who appeared on Howard Stern's show and was also on Mad TV. His book, Too Fat to Fish, I thought it was going to be some bunch of controversial and nonsensical musings peppered with the F word. It was a really good book. I was very surprised to see how he grew up and almost ended up like Chris Farley or John Belushi, but saved himself. But it's a terrific book. Very surprising, and I do recommend that pretty highly as well.
Excellent. And how can people find your work?
Well, you could read me in the West End Times every week, or either in paper or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
So there's the Dead Tree version, and there's also www.westendtimes.ca, correct?
Got it. You got it.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Well, you're welcome, Peter, and I think I'll go strum a banjo and wear a white suit now.
Okay. Stuart Nullman and Book Banter here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, here on The Stuff File program.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of The Stuff File program. We have a few more Stuff File stories for you and, of course, an idiot of the day. But let's get to those stories first. The dispute started over some questionable guitar playing, said Madison, Wisconsin police spokesperson Joel Despain. A 54-year-old man went over to Bongo Jesus, that's right, Bongo Jesus, and provided some sort of critique on his playing. That escalated to a fist fight. When police were called, we were advised that the musician was hitting the victim over the head with the guitar. By the time officers arrived, others were involved in the fight, and Bongo allegedly fought off an officer and had to be subdued with a taser. Mr. Jesus, or actually Brandon Hochstrasser, age 31, was charged with battery, battery on a police officer, resisting arrest, and disorderly conduct. Wow. A guitar player, and he goes by the name of Bongo. He must be really bad. Elsewhere, a state judge in Iowa has ruled that a police officer from Fort Madison is entitled to unemployment benefits even though he was fired for alleged misconduct. Patrol officer William Bowker wasn't fired after other officers took photos of him sleeping on duty twice, drank alcohol while on duty, refused to attend training classes, or use police computers to manage his football and baseball fantasy league teams. Oh, you can't do that? Anyway. But he was fired after having an affair with a reserve officer at the department who happens to be the chief's wife. Wow, it takes a amazing amount of cojones to cuckold a guy who carries a gun. That's all I'm saying. Okay, things got a bit hot and heavy for two women. After getting a few drinks, they were sitting in the audience of a glee club competition at James Madison High School in Brooklyn, New York, but left early to get a room, as the saying goes. Unfortunately, school officials say the women went to a classroom at the school. Shocked witnesses identified the two as Spanish teacher Alina Brito and French teacher Cindy Muaro. The room they ended up in was room 337, which was Muaro's classroom, and two handymen walked in on them. What were they doing? Well, Superintendent Linda Waite sets the scene. One had on pants with no shirt. She was putting on a white bra with one breast still hanging out when the men walked in on the pair in their inappropriate sexual behavior. The men call security and the assistant principal. The teachers have demanded a hearing to present a defense. What could possibly be their defense? Anyway, I think I've seen this movie, but it ended quite differently. The handyman didn't call for help. Anyway. One more quick story before we get to our idiot of the day. An inspector paid a surprise visit to a daycare in Jones County, Georgia, on reports that it was overcrowded. The operator, Laverne Stubbs, age 36, allegedly hid four children, aged 6 to 11, behind a storage unit, but the inspector found them. Stubbs allegedly said the kids were not enrolled in the daycare and told them to leave. The kids were found by a motorist walking along the road. Their home was 15 miles away. A sheriff's deputy brought them back to the daycare and arrested Stubbs for reckless conduct. So really, it's more of a they don't care is what it is. You know, I came very, very close to making this moron the idiot of the day, but I didn't. However, this now is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
The car parked illegally in a driveway in Maywood, Illinois, probably couldn't go unnoticed by law enforcement. After all, the driveway led to the Cook County Sheriff's Office. Deputies who checked in also noticed a statue of Jesus Malverde on the center console. That's the supposed patron saint of drug traffickers. Sure enough, they found 50 kilos of cocaine in the car and arrested Jose Ramirez Rodriguez, age 23, and Efren Rodriguez Juarez, age 32, on drug charges. Here's a quote from a sheriff spokeswoman. Clearly, the narco saint doesn't protect everyone. Well, actually, I don't know. It did a pretty good job for the deputies involved, don't you think? Yes. So the question begs to be asked, why would someone who's a drug trafficker have a car filled with cocaine and also a statue of the patron saint of drug traffickers on the dash and park said car in the driveway of the Cook County Sheriff's Office? There's only one reason, and one reason only. They're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, number 0061. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and you could email me at peter@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and at Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show, on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, and aboard Taiwan's national carrier, China Airlines, for long-haul Dynasty flights, and over the air on World FM 88.2 in New Zealand and Gold FM 90.5 in Singapore. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications.
I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.